Good afternoon and welcome to the Gnostic Radio Program of Adelaide. It's just after four and you're tuned into PBA FM 89.7. This is your weekly fix of all things mystical, psychological and philosophical. Today you're here with myself, that's Diana Azam, and our regular Adam Mystery.
Hello.
Hello, Adam. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for your time. So today's topic is on esoteric discipline. Okay, so we're all wondering, what does esoteric discipline mean, do you think?
Well, it's an interesting thing because when people talk about discipline or they just use the word discipline, it's kind of like a negative word that they have in their vocabulary. Because, you know, we all get disciplined by our parents when we're children, or we get disciplined at school, or someone disciplines us in the workplace or for whatever reason, and we don't like it. And in the end, discipline becomes like a dirty word that no one wants to talk about. No, don't mention the D word. No one speaks on discipline anymore. But discipline is actually something very important in really all walks of life. But with esoteric discipline, a new understanding comes, because when we arrive at a spiritual path or a mystical path, we quickly realize, or even we slowly realize, that something needs to change within us, or we won't really get anywhere. We won't really arrive at any realizations. We won't achieve, or we won't let go of anything.
That's true. If we don't change anything, how can we expect our lives to change? Or things to change.
Exactly. And the first thing that really needs to change is, you know, our view towards ourself, our discipline, how we go about things.
I suppose you could say that a lot of people wouldn't progress in the spiritual studies because of that. Or not even just that, anything that requires effort, like, say.
Indeed. I mean, a lot of things people can or will go into because they get inspired. And that's a good thing. Inspiration is a good thing, which kind of initiates us, you know, motivation, inspiration. But that is, inspiration is a flame that continuously needs kindling. And if you can't do that, then what, you know, what pulls you through the dark nights? You know, you need a strong foundation.
Okay. So why is this type of discipline important in the esoteric studies?
Well, talking about esoteric studies, you always have to talk about meditation. So every, you know, real practical school of mysticism will have some form of meditation or some form of quieting the mind. And it's very interesting because when you study lots of different types of meditation, and I think one of the most common kind of steps is Patanjali's eight limbs of yoga, which they usually just say, you know, there's the eight kind of limbs of meditation, or the eight kind of ways of meditation, or the eight levels of meditation in a way. But when they use this, they actually only use they cut out the first two, and they just give the last six, I suppose. They talk about the asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dhyana, dharana, and samadhi, those six, which in English, for those who don't speak Sanskrit, it's the levels of meditation. So you start with just sitting and you start relaxing the body. The asana is the posture. So you just sit and relax. That's one of the first things you do. And then the pranayama is the breath. It's to do with energy. Mantra can also kind of be put in there, but it's really with the breath, the focus on the breath. You know, continuously going to the breath, not getting distracted. When you get distracted, you always bring it back to the breath, pranayama. Then there's pratyahara, which is that serene reflection. It's then when you let go of the breath and you can just watch the mind serenely. Thoughts come up, but you don't fall into them. So you are separate from them. You're no longer engaged in them, and then they move away. Mm-hmm. And then there's dhyana, dharana, and samadhi, which are far more esoteric. But those are the kind of six steps you always kind of see. And it's very interesting because a lot of people get into meditation and a lot of people, you know, fail. Or I don't want to say fail, it's more like they just leave. They just kind of go, oh, I can't meditate. And they just give up. And it's very interesting because when I was studying this and I found, you know, Patanjali's eight limbs of yoga, and I read the step before asana, the step before relaxation, is actually discipline. It's actually found, you need that discipline, you need that foundation. That's one of the first things you should have before actually engaging in, you know, an undertaking. And the spiritual path is a real undertaking. It's not, you know, I'm going to be spiritual, so I'll quit my job and move to the hills. And yeah, it's really something profound, and it really, you know, needs a strong dedication.
Why do you think it's often removed or not focused on? I suppose it's because it requires effort.
I know. I think it's also, you know, what I said, discipline can kind of be a scary word for some people. Like a lot of people have that misconception. They always go, you know, I'm going to go on a spiritual path, or I'm going to start something and I'm going to find a guru and he'll do everything for me, or he'll give me the teachings and that will be it.
Yep.
But actually, you know, when you come, the guru can do everything he can, but in the end, you have to do something. You actually have to give something up. You have to initiate. And so it's hard because, you know, in school we're disciplined by the teachers. But when we really come to a serious point in our esoteric work, we have to discipline ourselves. And without that discipline, we go nowhere. And we can deceive ourselves because the ego is good at that. That's when the ego kind of takes those values of the mystical work and it, you know, runs with it. And it really does well at mimicking the esoteric work. And people can spend years in an esoteric school and you can see them and they've gotten nowhere. And it's why is that? It's they've mimicked. They haven't actually done anything.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking that when we don't have that self-discipline, we can become disheartened very easily by the people that we respect, because we have a high standard of them and we expect a lot of them because we don't have that self-discipline, and that can get us into trouble, and we can possibly lose track or lose inspiration because we've put too much on, you know, our guides or our gurus.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things we always that's another thing about discipline. We always want to discipline other people in a way. We always want to we always see another person at kind of our level, or they should, we you know, we look at someone and we say, oh, we're able to do that, therefore they should do that. Or why is that person allowed to do that and I'm not? And that's another kind of thing we have to arrive at the esoteric work is, you know, people are at different levels. It's not, there's a very big new agey misconception with, you know, spirituality that there's like a wheelchair ramp and everyone should be enlightened and we're all gods. And, but that's actually leads to megalomania. And once again, that's the ego mimicking the spiritual work. I like that story of Socrates where he sees like a philosopher or someone trying to be a philosopher, and he has like, it's like a man just kind of put on like a robe with like holes in it and was walking down the market because, you know, he had the philosopher's robe on so people would respect him. And Socrates just saw him and said, oh, I can see your vanity shining through the holes in your robe. That's what happens to those kind of people. They, you know, they clothe themselves in, you know, their sufferings, they clothe themselves in intellectual knowledge, or they, you know, they read a million esoteric books, but they never experience anything. They never have a direct experience of what's real.
You know, they say, talking about that mystical pride where we think, you know, we're greater than we actually are. And the saying that pride comes before every fall. Just reflecting on when we're feeling like we don't want to continue with our work, is a big limitation to.
Yeah, that's definitely something. It's very, and that's actually one of those things which is very interesting because it always has a silver lining. Like when we enter a big work and, you know, we want to apply discipline finally. And so we try and we go into work and we do something, but we go very kind of gung-ho into the work. And, you know, from not meditating at all or only having a 10-20 minute meditation, we go see a teacher and he's amazing and he gives us all of these teachings and he tells us of his experiences and we go, oh, I want to experience that. And then when we go home, you know, we go, yeah, all right. And we sit down and we do a 2-hour meditation and we go right into it and it's good. But then the next day we, you know, oh, I should probably meditate again. And we go in, we try, and it's like, oh, 2 hours, oh, is it almost up? And then the next day it's even worse, and the next day it's worse. And then the next day, you know, someone, our mum calls us, and we're like, oh, hey, mum, blah, blah, blah. And we just kind of forget about it. And the next day we're like, oh, no, I forgot that meditation. What do I do? And, you know, and then, oh, yeah, I'll just do it tomorrow. And, of course, we don't do it tomorrow, and the ego unfolds our practices. We've kind of, you know, if you look at it like a pendulum almost, it's almost if we go too hard one way, it'll just swing the other way. We kind of go into the spiritual work and it slams us back, and that can cause us disillusionment. But the silver lining to the disillusionment is it's not of the ego. The disillusionment it comes from the ego in a way, but it's the breaking of the ego. Because someone who's a megalomaniac and thinks they're doing really well in the spiritual work, they're definitely not going to go anywhere. You know, they can spend 10, 20, 30 years in the spiritual work and not get anywhere. But if you feel disillusionment, that you can view that as a good thing, because it means you have a clear vision for once. You're actually seeing yourself. You're actually going, man, I've done nothing. And with that clear vision, then you can orientate yourself. So you kind of, it's always that, you know, number six of the tarot, it's indecision, that, you know, when you get disillusioned, do you go back into material life or do you keep going? And that's that way that willpower comes in. You need to orientate yourself with your willpower. Once that kind of disillusionment has fallen through, you just look back and you look at where you want to go and you go, okay, I'm starting again from scratch, and you just have to keep moving.
That's when the real willpower sort of manifests or kicks in, doesn't it?
Yes.
It's not when we're sort of in the height of inspiration. It's in those low moments.
Indeed.
When we see the reality of the situation.
Exactly. One of the rare times that people see reality is, you know, at the lowest point of their life. That's when they hit rock bottom, is when all the, you know, the curtains are removed and they actually see themselves what they are.
Yeah, so it's really intriguing, this willpower that keeps us going in the work.
Indeed, in the end, it's kind of like the divine willpower, because we have a physical willpower, it's kind of misnamed. The physical will isn't our real will. We shouldn't really call it will. It's more like, you know, just an energy that our motor energy that keeps going. Whereas our real willpower is the esoteric willpower, which, you know, comes from our higher self, us as we are, as like an essence in a body. We are kind of an expression of our higher self. And so as an expression, us on the path, we are, what is it, our willpower expressing is our higher self moving us on the path. And so it's one of those other, that's another thing that we have to come to realize, is when we move on a spiritual path, it's different from real life. Because in real life, when you're at a job, you know, that's your personality, or there's, you know, if you're a lawyer, that could be, or a politician, it could be your ego you're presenting, and it could be a decorative ego, you know, something that a lot of people want to look up to, especially with pop stars or things like that. They all have big egos, people say, a lot of pride, but the pride is, you know, kind of glamorizes a lot of people. And so all of the physical lines of life kind of have, it's kind of paths of the ego. But when you're on a spiritual path, the thing that moves on the spiritual path is not you. It is your spirit. It is your higher self. That's the thing that moves, and that's the thing that matters. And that's one thing that's really hard to do, because we have those misconceptions. You know, we go on the path because, I don't know, we want magical powers or we want enlightenment, but we don't want enlightenment. We have an idea of what enlightenment is, and we want that. We want peace of mind, or we want another buzzword that someone flings around. And that kind of, when we don't get that, or when we realize that we're not going to get that, that's when, you know, that's when the disillusionment sets in. And it's kind of, you know, this is, you know, looking at it as a good thing, because in a way you can kind of look at it like a kind of a coffee plunger. You know, the plunger goes down and it pushes the pressure of life, the disillusionment, that heaviness, it pushes all of the chunky egoical bits to the bottom, and all of the good stuff, you know, rises to the top, the pure, the essence, that alchemical process. And it's that essence, we are the essence, that reunites with the being. When it's in the absence of the, when we're in the absence of the ego, we're at our closest point to the higher self, in a way. When the pressure becomes too much and the ego collapses and the curtains pull away, we actually can experience the divine.
Wow, I'm very inspiring. So we're going to go to our music break. This is a track from the movie Brother, Sun, Sister Moon.
Great movie.
Yes, indeed. It's a movie about the life of St. Francis of Assisi, essentially. And if you haven't seen it, strongly recommend that you go and hire it from the movie store.
Or so download it.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sure it's on iTunes.
Possibly, yes. Yeah. So it's by Donovan, so...
it's a great movie.
We will be back after a few minutes on the Gnostic Radio Program of Adelaide. And welcome back to the Gnostic Radio Program of Adelaide. We're talking about esoteric discipline. You're with Diana and Adam. So that was just a track from the movie Brother, Sun, Sister Moon, from the life of St. Francis. It's interesting. We're talking about feeling disillusionment and how the path, the spiritual path, or really any path, you know, trying to think broadly, any path where you want to attain something of greatness, you're going to have a lot of resistance. Mm. It's like the more you gain, the more resistance there is. And that's actually a really interesting topic. Yeah. Which we,
if you want to gain something, you need to give something.
Yes, but also that teaching, I'm thinking of calculating the resistance in every action. There's an equal and opposite reaction, so it's understanding and calculating that is going to keep us one step ahead. I mean, it's not going to make things totally like smooth sailing, but it's definitely going to help us to keep going, to find that inspiration. And what can provide us inspiration but the people that have walked before us. So, you know, the St. Francis. That's right. He was a revolutionary guy for his time. Mm-hmm. I watched a documentary on it quite a while ago, and it said that he wasn't the healthiest of people. He was actually quite a sickly person, but he had such a strong sense of spirit, and that kept him going. And
the flesh is weak, but the spirit is strong.
That's right. And as you were saying before, that's where our real willpower comes from. Yep. When we fall, but we manage to get up, that is actually the higher parts of our being that keep us going. And I suppose every revolutionary...
I think there's an old Japanese proverb that if you fall down 7 times, you just get up 8.
Right.
Yeah. It's very hardcore.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, we all know that we all hear these sayings, but it's just a matter of really believing that and just, you know.
Well, experiencing it as well.
Yeah, definitely. So back to this law of pendulum. How do you think we overcome, or some tips on how to overcome that swing of action and inaction, you could say?
Yes, well, it's very interesting, the law of the pendulum. It's very deadly for new people, especially. Because the disillusionment, when you first experience it, I think that's what, you know, really pushes people off of the path. All of those people who said, oh, I tried meditation, but it didn't work. Or, you know, you can see it in normal walks of life as well. You see it all the time with people who try to lose weight and they say, oh, I've tried everything. And it's really, they tried a couple of things once and it didn't really work out. But the law of the pendulum, one of the interesting things I read about was in a book quite a long time ago I've read, but it was very good, very succinct. It's called The Kybalion. It's a very ancient book, or supposedly ancient. It's one of those books that no one knows who wrote it. Very mysterious, it just appeared one day. But it's a hermetic work. So... In the book, they talk about some very interesting things, you know, about the mind, or the esoteric structure of the mind, and some of the esoteric properties of the universe, and also the physical human. But the thing that interests us is it talks about laws of the universe in the Kybalion. And one of the laws of the universe it talks about is the law of the pendulum. And they talk about it in a sort of rhythm, because the pendulum has a rhythm. And as our lives have, you know, rhythm, there are times when we're very active and there are times when we're inactive. And we have to come to understand that in our practices, they need to be like that as well. Like I'm talking when I've been talking, you know, I've been talking about discipline, and it sounds, you know, like with a hammer, like bang, bang, you got to discipline yourself like all the time, like get out the whips, like, but it's not like that at all. The discipline needs to be natural in a sense. And this is where the Kybalion has a very interesting point, because it talks about that rhythm of life. And so we actually need to change our rhythm. So when we're active, and, you know, like the pendulum swings and it swings the other way. So there's a time when the pendulum is kind of swinging forward and it's bringing us with it, and we're very inspired, or something's happened, like we've gone to a spiritual retreat and once again we've talked to a guru and we've had some good ideas and we want to put them into practice, and we go into that practice. Or we've had a moment of activity where we've read a whole bunch of books on, you know, meditation or esoteric practices, and we want to put them into action. So we start putting them into action, and we have this long kind of line, like weeks or months of practice that are very kind of active. And what happens is we need to understand there's a rhythm with that. When they start becoming hard, when there's a natural resistance, we need to kind of pacify. But becoming passive doesn't mean not doing nothing, you know, not doing anything. It means we actually need to keep our practices, but we need to change the practice. If the practice becomes mechanical, that's a sign that, you know, the pendulum has taken stuff out of it. Because when we pacify, it's like we change our kind of vibration in a way. So we basically want to make ourselves invisible to the pendulum. So when the pendulum swings by, it misses us. Mm-hmm. So it's changing up our kind of practice. Can be, you know, from meditation, we can change it to prayer. So, and that's another, a lot of people don't like prayer nowadays, but, you know, you don't need to pray to, you know, some strange man in the clouds. You can pray to the inner divinity within you. You know, the higher self, the inner Buddha, your intimate divine mother, those things within us. We have, you know, a laundry list, like we have an army of, you know, positive forces inside of us that we can, you know, activate and work with. And so there'll be times when we work more esoterically, and then there'll be times when we work more, you know, energetically, you could say. And so by working with this, by moving with the pendulum, by, you know, acting esoterically, we can actually kind of, you know, that old saying, you know, one law, a superior law sweeps away an inferior law. The law of the pendulum is an inferior law that can be swept away with the law of rhythm, I suppose.
Yeah, interesting. I was thinking of the teaching of the changing of the centers.
Indeed.
The Master Samael.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, so when you get an intellectual block, you go for a walk in the park, or when you have, you know, a strong emotional upheaval, you should go read a book, or if you're really tired, listen to some music.
Yeah, and, you know, we can apply this in the practices, because there's, well, I suppose a lot of our listeners may not know, but, you know, a well-seasoned Gnostic knows that there's lots of different practices.
Oh, yes.
You know, there's
too many.
Too many indeed. Yes, we are very spoilt for practices, many different mantras. Actually, on that note, a wise teacher said that to pray is to vibrate.
And
to mantralize is to vibrate. So in essence, to mantralize, therefore, is to pray. So it's really great to have this opportunity to broaden our understanding of prayer, and not to just to be stuck in that regimented concept of what a prayer is that we may have inherited from.
Exactly.
I don't know, somewhere. But we can revitalize that, re-inspire ourselves to connect with these higher principles. Yeah. They're closer than we think. They're in us. It's just to be able to connect with that, to change our frequency for a second, to still the mind, to still the senses, and to really perceive those subtle forces is something that we can do. But, yeah, there's so many different mantras we can use
Yeah, I like what you said. It's that kind of, we can experience the divine at any kind of time or point. And it's very interesting, because we can experience the divine at any time, but the union with the divine is kind of the path. So it's like the path is laden with these points of a kind of awakening. And slowly we have these points of awakening. And then once we're awake, then we slowly have kind of sparks of total realization. But to get to there, the purpose of the discipline is to reach kind of that union. And so with the discipline comes the building of practices. And so one thing that kind of really knocks out our practices is the, once again, I want to bring it back to people who go really Rambo into practices and they go to an esoteric teacher and he says meditate for 2 hours and they just go home and they try it. Whereas what